What a great lead-in for my special guest, Bob Barry. Best remembered as a legendary Milwaukee DJ, he introduced the Beatles during their only Milwaukee appearance and was the only local personality to spend time privately with them. Though a successful Bob Barry Calls the World show, he interviewed famous and infamous celebrities, including Bob Hope, Sophia Loren, Ron Howard, Elton John, Cher, and lots more. During his career, he received numerous industry awards, chief among them Billboard Magazine's Top 40 Air Personality of the Year, 1975. And in 2001, Bob inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. It is my honor to speak with Bob Barry this morning. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
Joining us,
you guys are doing good.
Yeah, we are. Joining us this morning is someone you used to work with. I feel like this is like one of those "this is your life" thing. So somebody used to work with in radio. He worked overnights, and you followed him in the morning. See, he was your big lead-in. That's why you did so well. Chris Morrow, our vice president, general manager, worked overnights. What a lead-in. That's why you were so successful. Okay, Bob, we're going to talk about your book, and the book is fantastic. And I can tell you, it's not just for radio people, because my wife actually read me the book, because she's such a great reader, and she loved it. Rock and Roll Radio, Milwaukee Stories from the Fifth Beatle. Now, we're going to do this in chronological order, just so, because I want to keep my head straight on this. Did you ever work in radio outside Wisconsin?
Never.
That's what I thought.
No, the only time I ever worked on a radio station outside Wisconsin is when I had a bet going with the guys at CFL. And they lost, and they had to come and do my show. But they said, hey, who's going to do our show? So so I went to Chicago and did their morning show, and they came here to Doug Galdrin.
Sure.
There's a name from the past, yeah.
You know, it's funny. You're going to mention a lot of names, and I've only been in Wisconsin since 1980, but you're going to mention a lot of names. Now, Chris has been in Wisconsin radio almost all his life. He's got stories we could talk about some other time from his out-of-state radio stations. Yeah. But what made you go into radio?
I had a lot of encouragement from instructors in college, and they said, you know, why don't you, you know, they heard me do in speech class, they heard me do some presentations, and they liked it. And so a friend of mine happened to, his dad owned a part of WTKM in Hartford, and he said, why don't you go talk to my dad? And the other owner is the owner of the Hartford Times Press, and he owns a part of the radio station too. So go and talk to them and see what they have to say. Well, it just so happened that they had a part-time position open, and I went on the air there. I was so bad I couldn't stand myself. I thought, well, this is the end of my career. But they were desperate. And they kept me on, and I guess I improved because I stayed there for almost a couple of years. And when I left, I'll never forget George Dodge, the manager, saying, this is nothing but a school for broadcasters, because they go on from here to other stations. And that's when I came to Milwaukee, to WENP.
Before we get there, now, WTKM is in Hartford. At the time you were there, it was a polka station, and the Kettle Moraine, that's where it gets the name from. But it's up in Hartford, still around, still doing whatever they do. But you were there for a couple of years playing polka music, right?
Yeah, right. And my mom loved it. She loved Lawrence Welk and all those, you know, the polka artists of those, Frankie Yankovic and all those. And she thought I was famous until she found out I was broadcasting from the basement of a farmhouse.
That's right.
Now, how did you make the leap to Milwaukee radio? Because that's tough to go from a small town to a big city. And Milwaukee radio was huge at that time. How did you make that leap to get into a major radio station?
Oh, man, that was really surprising, because Chuck Phillips, who was the program director at WENP at the time, the way he would choose announcers, he would drive around the state and he would listen to radio stations like yours and WTKM and all the stations around the state. And if he hears somebody he liked, he would call them up and ask them if they wanted a job. So the all-night man at the time, in fact, they changed positions because Coffee Ed Larson was on at that time. And I just dropped an earphone, excuse me. Coffee Ed Larson was on, and he switched over to WRIT, and so they needed somebody right away. So he asked if I'd do the all-night show. So that was a thrill. Yeah, right, to work with Joe Dorsey and Rob Thomas and Tom Shanahan. Yeah, I'll do it. So that's how I started in Milwaukee Radio.
Everybody starts overnight. And Chris, how old were you when you were working overnights?
I was probably 19 doing overnights at WOKY. But I had started in Racine when I was 14. But it was wow. A little AM station in Racine where I played the Sunday morning, you know, religious shows.
That's
and
what
public
I
affairs.
Yeah,
yeah. 14 years old pushing buttons.
Yeah, we all did those.
Beautiful music. But yeah, the overnight show on WOKY was my break into Milwaukee. And it, for me, at the age of 19, I thought I had, you know, just made the biggest jump of my career.
Okay, so... Yeah. So you're now the big stations in town, I assume the three big ones were WEMP, WRIT, which is, it's not what it is today. It was an AM station,
1340,
and WOKY. Those were the big three. And you were at WEMP, right?
That's right.
Okay, so describe the life at WEMP at that time, because that is, what was EMP, 1290?
1250
WEMP. And so what was life like there for you?
Well, that was interesting because we were playing all the, you know, big bands and Rosemary Clooney and Peggy Lee, Frank Sinatra. And we had all, it was all records, of course. I know this is going to be hard for some of the younger people to understand, but there were 45s, 78s, and 33 and a third. So we would stack these. And you'd stack them in the music library, and you'd bring them into the studio. Many times you didn't make it. You stacked them too high, and they'd all over the place. Yes. And of course, 78s were breakable, so you know you'd lose part of your show. But that's the type of, you know, and you were able to choose your own music out of what they had in the library, and the mark cuts, some of them were marked, and... That was, you know, pretty much the way it was in those days.
We'll take a quick break. We're talking to Bob Barry, who has a book out, and this is really good. Rock and Roll Radio Milwaukee Stories from the Fifth Beatle. Can't wait till we get to the Beatle stuff, because you have pictures in here with Paul McCartney. And Paul McCartney now will not take a photo with anybody. And I've got a story about a big-time radio guy in New York wanted a picture with Paul McCartney. He said no. Wouldn't do it. So you're very lucky. You've got one of the few photos with Paul McCartney. Hey, we're talking to Bob Barry this morning. I hate to keep saying this because I know I'm embarrassing him, but legendary radio personality in Milwaukee. I mean, last night I mentioned that Bob Barry was going to be on the radio. We were at that function with Jim and Carol at a church in on Wright Avenue. And I mentioned, everybody in the crowd went, ooh. Got a great following. Okay, so... You're at WEMP, and we got to get you to WOKY. How did you make the leap from EMP to OKY?
Okay, you mentioned people on a beach, and I was working the all-night show, and that's a crazy story, too, because I went to a party for the circus parade, which that's when the circus parade was in Milwaukee every year. And there, John Reddy, the program director at WOKY, said, we've got an opening on the all-night show. Would you like to take it? Yeah, definitely. And I was out of work, and that's another long story. But anyway, I took the job. And in the middle of the summer, all the kids are out at the beach, and Lee Gray is on the air in the afternoon, on a Sunday afternoon, and he plays the song Girls Are Made to Love by Eddie Hodges. But he introduces it as Girls Are Made to Lay by Eddie Hodges.
Oh, no.
And he got a call from John Reddy, the program director, and said, you're done. And he told the engineer, cut his mic off. That's when engineers played the records, and all we had to do was sit there and talk. And he called me and he said, "You want a full-time job?" So I went from the all-night show to a full-time all-night show gig. So I was still working the all-night show, but it was full-time.
And that's at WOKY, though.
That was at OKY, right?
Wow, and that's when the legend started right there. Now, how did you get started at OKY, Chris?
I had been working here in Racine at the old WRKR, and I was just a young rock and roll disc jockey, and for some reason, Jim Brown was the program director at WOKY at the time, and Jim was a character. Bob will back that up.
Man. Great guy. Yeah.
Yeah, but just a bigger-than-life kind of dude. And he held court at a bar across the street from the radio station on Sermon Boulevard. I think it was called the Tanglewood.
Was it?
Oh, okay. The annex.
Yeah.
That's right.
Tanglewood was down on Fond du Lac Avenue, quite a ways.
That's right. But yeah, the annex. And he invited me up for an interview one day, and it was in a bar. And he had his own phone at his booth, and that's pretty much where he did business, and said, "I got an overnight opening. It goes 2 to 6 in the morning. It starts, like, next Monday. Can you do it?" And I was like, "Oh, I will. I will." Because at the time, I mean, WOKY, this was in the 70s, was the biggest station a young person, or really a lot of people, would listen to. And for me, the day always started with Bob Barry calling the world, and it was just kind of a part of our culture growing up down here. So when I got that overnight job at WOKY, I thought it was the peak of my career at 19, and maybe it was, because moved around a lot after that. But yeah, that's how I made the jump from playing the hits at WRKR to going to Milwaukee, thinking it was the big time.
From mowing the lawn.
Did you work with George Wilson also, Chris?
George, he was the general manager at the time.
Okay.
I think he was the general manager. I was so far down the pecking order. I came in at 1:30 in the morning and left at 6:05 when you got there. So it was pretty much a sheltered existence in those studios on Sherman Boulevard.
Hey, Bob, how did you make the jump from overnights to mornings?
I worked several shifts after the all-night show. And the big move was in 64 when Bill Taylor was doing the 7 to 11, I think it was, or it may have been 8 to midnight, I don't remember. But he did voices, and he was really clever. He was good. And the manager said, or the program director said, "Look, Bill, you're really good, but you got to control what you're doing with these voice tracks." And Bill got ticked off, and he said, "I'm not going to do it." So they took Bill out of that shift, put him on the all-night show, and they put me on the 7 to 11, and that's when the Beatles hit. And so I started playing almost all Beatles, and that's how I got the gig doing the Beatles concert.
Now, every city had one DJ and one radio station that was Beatlemania. In New York, it was WABC,
yeah.
And they laid claim immediately to we're the official Beatle radio station. And there were other stations in town that wanted to try to worm their way into that. But when the Beatles came to town, that's the station they chose, WABC. Were all the stations vying to be the Beatles station here in town?
No. WRIT was more like the Rolling Stone. If you ask Eddie Jussette, he'll tell you that the Beatles, they were for girls, you know, the teeny bopper girls. And the Rolling Stones, they were a man's group. You know, so they did not. They played them. They were forced to. You know, they had to play them. In fact, when a new Beatle record would come in, they would bring it over to us and say, "Now look, we're going to give you this new Beatle record, but I don't want you to play it until we get over to WRIT and give them the record. So we'll call you as soon as we get to RIT." Well, they no longer got out the door, and we had that new Beatle record on the air. So it was, you know, it was cutthroat in those days. I think one of the stories that you referred to when we were talking yesterday was when RIT would play a record, popular record, Mitch Michael, who did the afternoons, would play the same record So the kids that switch back and forth, trying to get away from a song they didn't like or a commercial, they would hear the same thing on OKY. That's what was on RIT. So we were doing all kinds of stuff in those days that you'd never hear of today.
Radio wars back then.
Yep, it was.
Now, did they, when you moved from EMP to WOKY, was there animosity between the two stations that now, hey, you just stole our guy?
No, EMP was, that was a little different because, you know, they were, I was younger, so I didn't fit in with Dorsey and Rob Thomas and those guys. So that wasn't a big, the big problem was when I moved from WOKY back to WEMP, and a really stupid move, but I thought, you know, I was looking at the money. And instead of, you know, how dumb it was to make that move.
Did you work at WRIT as well?
Yes, I did, for a very short time. And then they went automated. And then I went to work for the Sentinel in the promotion department. And then the Journal bought the Sentinel. That's when I was at that circus party and was hired by WOKY.
Man, you're lucky, though. In radio,
yes,
a lot of well, a lot of people when they're radio had to move all over the country and get a U-Haul and buy it and own it. But you, luckily, just a different route to get to work every day. That's all you had to do because all the stations were nearby. So that's pretty neat.
Well, and I loved Milwaukee too. I had opportunities to go to Minneapolis, L.A., Chicago. Chicago was one that I really did think about doing at WGN in Chicago. But I thought about the family, and I said, nah, I don't want to move them into that kind of an atmosphere. So I stayed at OKY, and they would always, you know, give me more money or some furniture or a car. Or, you know.
Nothing like that trade account at the furniture store.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Bob, before we come back after the news, I've always wondered, what made you start Bob Barry Calls the World? Because to this day, I remember the interviews, the phone calls, the people you talked to. But to me, Bob Barry Calls the World was brilliant because, heck, long-distance phone calls were expensive back then. And you didn't just pick up the phone. So my image is, you know, you had this account with AT&T to call the world. And for whatever reason, you know, they paid it for you. But when we come back, I want to hear what inspired that to happen.
And I want to hear some of the crazy calls you made, because you mentioned them in the book, some of the wild calls. And I also want to talk about some of the crazy contests you got involved in. And, of course, the celebrities you interviewed, the Beatles and so forth. And my special guest is Bob Barry, who wrote a book called Rock and Roll Radio, Milwaukee Stories from the Fifth Beatle. Chris Morrow joining us, our vice president, general manager, is here because Bob and Chris work together at WOKY. Now, you're going to have to leave in about 10 minutes.
I do.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe 11 minutes. We'll see how we can do here. You want to say something?
Well, no, just before the news, I was going to ask Bob, how did the Bob Barry Calls the World idea come to you? And the way it just really took off, it became a brand for the remainder of your career. What was the catalyst for that? And how did it start? And I guess, and Don's got these questions, I'm sure. What was the weirdest, what was the best interview you did when you were calling the world back in the day?
Well, the way that Calls the World started, I was on the air from noon to 3 at the time, and I was bored. This is an awful shift, and so I got to do something here. So I said, what would happen if we called the White House and asked for the president? So that's what I did, and I got a runaround that you wouldn't believe. I mean, from one department to another. Nowadays, they just hang up on you, I'm sure.
Right, right.
But, and people loved it. I said, oh, you know, maybe I got something here, you know. So then I called a pizza place in Italy. I ordered a pizza. And that was a funny bit. The guy was, you know, broken English, and it was very funny. So when I got onto the morning show, I decided, hey, I'll keep this going. So that's how it started.
But the fun thing was, though, it became such a brand for so long. It was kind of set on Bob Barry calls the world. It just took off as such a big deal. I to this day, I remember some of those phone calls, and I remember hearing about the White House call. I didn't hear it actually myself, but I remember hearing about it and thought it was one of the funniest things he could have done.
I'm sorry, you cut out there. Which one were you talking about?
The White House call. I mean, brave to make. Can you imagine today, not only probably getting hung up on, but having visitors at your front door, just for calling the White House with a prank? They'd be after you.
Well, I got away with calling. You know, these were live.
Yeah.
I didn't say you're on the air or anything. I mean, these were just, you know, and of course the FCC finally cracked down on people doing that.
Yeah.
But I was calling all over the world, the Prime Minister of Australia, woke him up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and stuff like that, that you could get away with today. I would call plants during the pollution scare in the 70s. I would call Alice Chalmers and say, hey, there's cars outside with dirt all over them from your plant. What's going on? And, they really got upset because they were on live radio trying to answer that question. So it was stuff like that.
I worked at WOKY, but I didn't work in the fun days. I worked in the mundane days of WOKY. They were music of your life, and it was and you couldn't really do much but intro and outro the songs and so forth. But you also worked there with a gentleman who worked here for 20 years. He just recently passed away about a month or so ago. Ron Richards. You worked with
One of the nicest guys.
Yeah.
He was a rebel, though. I mean, a lot of the stuff he didn't like to play that we were playing, and so he'd tell the program director. So he was, but he was a neat guy, nice guy.
You have to go?
I got to tell you just one more story about calling. One morning I called. This was when you had to answer your phone. I listened to Fun Loving WOKY, and I called WISN Switchboard. And the girl, the receptionist answered, she said WISN, and I said, I'm sorry. If you would have said I listen to Fun Loving WOKY, you would have won $3,420. He said, oh, no, she said, and I listen to you all the time. But, of course, she said, I'm at the switchboard, so I can't listen at the switchboard. You understand that, right? And I said, yeah, I understand that. Luckily, she didn't get fired. But, that's the kind of thing that you guys couldn't do today.
Right.
But I did it in those days.
That was probably John Hinkle's first heart attack over at WISN.
Hey, wait a second. We got a phone here. Let's try it. Let's call somebody in Milwaukee right now and see if they can answer the phone. You have to run, Chris.
I've got to run. But, Bob, it was so great to hear you back on the radio this morning. And thanks for the inspiration of my career over the years. And I'll never forget that first morning that I was working overnights. I sweat for 2 hours knowing that Bob Barry was going to be coming in to do his show. And when you did, you were the most gracious, kindest, easiest to work with guy that I worked with. So thank you for that. And keep going, man. Good to hear these stories.
Chris, thank you, and keep up your good work. I enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
And Chris is still sweating, knowing he was going to talk to you this morning here. He was still nervous.
I didn't know if I should make coffee or clear the AP wire before Bob came in.
All right, Chris has his corporate work to do right now.
Right.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We got so much more to talk about with Bob. Bob, let's talk about how you started off with the Beatles. How'd you get involved with the Beatles?
I got a call one day. Well, as I mentioned before, I played almost every other record, Beatle record, on my night show, 7 to 11 show. And so I had, they gave me the name Beatle Bob and the fifth Beatle and all that stuff. Well, the fifth Beatle came later, but Beatle Bob. And the promoter of the Midwest Beatle Concerts called me. And he said, we want you to MC the Beatle concert on September 4th. And I said, because I had been paid by, the Rolling Stones and Herman's Hermits and, all the rest of the groups that were coming through, Freddie and the Dreamers. I've been paid $250 for doing those concerts. So I said, what does it pay? And he said, well, we're not paying any of our MCs. And I said, well, I think I'll take a pass. And I hung up, and the music director, Arlene Quire, said, what was that all about? And I told her, and she said, you got to be kidding. She said, look at this. And she opened Cashbox and Billboard magazine, and Beatles were all over it, appearing in Europe, and they were the biggest thing. And I said, well, okay. She says, call them back and tell them you do it. So I did. And that was close, because they had already hired Eddie Doucette to do it over at RIT, and they had to call Eddie back and tell him that he would do the warm-up, he would introduce the warm-up acts and then introduce me. Can you imagine a guy from RIT introducing somebody from OKY? And then I would introduce the Beatles. So that's how that happened.
So that had to be that had to be a giant thing on your head. You're going to introduce the Beatles. And by the way, you have photos with them in their, it's now the Marquette dorms, but it was a hotel room at the time. And you have pictures with them, all four Beatles. I mean, that's got to be a big swell on your head to do something like that.
Well, the road manager for the Beatles, and it wasn't Epstein at the time, it was some woman that was with them, traveling with them. And after the concert, she said, we'd like you to come to the hotel tomorrow if you want to get an interview and bring your photographer along. And I said, oh, okay. So 10 o'clock the next morning, I was at the hotel just before they left for the airport. And that's when we took some pictures and talked to them.
You got some great pictures in this book, too. Tons of pictures, by the way. And just love looking at them. Let's talk about some of the other people you interviewed over the years, because you interviewed a ton of them. Because when they came through Milwaukee, they had to go on WOKY. And you were the guy. So let's talk about some of the other people you interviewed. And if you have any good stories about them, I want to hear it.
Well, I don't know where to start, because there's so many stories there was the really nice people, Les Paul, Elton John, Ron Howard, Jimmy Farr, Johnny Cash, Hank Aaron, Sophia Loren, Dolly Parton.
Back up.
Just super nice people.
How did you get, where does Sophia Loren fit in with all this?
Okay, Sophia was in town promoting a perfume, and she was at the WISN studios. I had done some work for WISN television. I had done some for WITI also. And they asked if I wanted to do an interview with her. So I did. And then she had to leave, and she had a limo parked out in front of the WISN. And I walked her out to the car, and we had a photographer at that time. The station had a photographer, and he would follow me whenever I had an interview. And that's how all those pictures turned up, because he was, Bob Lewis was his name, and he was a great photographer, and he took most of the pictures that you see in the book.
And you've got some great legendary pictures, you and Chuck Berry. Wow. And you actually have his hand.
That's
your
how
hand
the book
his...
came about,
yeah.
By the way. The book came about because the publisher said, well, send me a drafted book, and I did. And he saw the picture of Chuck with Chuck Berry, and he says, wow, this is interesting. He said, send me some more. So that's how I got a publisher for the book.
How'd you meet the Lone Ranger?
Chuck Berry picture.
How'd you meet the Clayton Moore, who was TV's Lone Ranger? How do they fit in? Some of these people, I don't know how they fit in at a rock and roll station. So how do they fit into this picture?
Well, they're always promoting something. And Clayton Moore was, I'm trying to think of what he was promoting. I know he was ticked off because they took his mask away.
He could no longer wear
a mask, so he had to wear sunglasses. And I believe there's a picture in there. I'm not sure if that picture is in the book or not, but my mother, I invited her with me to the interview, and she wore sunglasses. So the two of them are wearing sunglasses, and it's kind of a funny picture. I'm not sure if that one appeared in the book or not. But anyway, he was promoting side, and most of these, you know, when you look at most of them are promoting thing. Now, Dolly Parton, that was taken at the Grand Ole Opry. That was a new show they were introducing, and they invited me to go to Nashville to do interviews for this new show. And that's how I got to meet Dolly Parton. And she asked me if I wanted to go to a party. She said, there's a member of my band that's from Milwaukee. Why don't you come to a party we're having? And I said, oh, no. I said, I've got a flight back. And I said, there's no way I can get out of it. So that was one of my heartbreaks.
More with Bob Barry coming up in just a moment. We're talking about his book, Rock and Roll Radio, Milwaukee Stories from the Fifth Beatle. This is a great book. And even if you're not into radio, you're going to love this book. My wife and I asked her last night, we were coming back from somewhere, and she's from Union Grove. And I said, what stations did you listen to? And she said, well, WOKY was my favorite, but I also listened to WCFL and WLS, but it had to be WOKY. And that was it. 60s and 70s, that's her. And this was the where she grew up. And she loved reading this book to me. She's a great reader. That's why I had her read it to me. And
is it okay to mention where they can get the book?
Yeah, well, of course we're going to mention that. Yeah, go ahead.
It's available at Let It Be at 716 Clinton Street in Waukesha. And you can also send a check for $25, which includes postage, to Let It Be, 716 Clinton Street, Waukesha. And just put Bob Berry's book on there. And by the way, every penny, not proceeds, but every penny goes to the Donate Life Wisconsin Foundation. I have a couple of friends who received transplants. One received a heart transplant and another a double lung transplant because he has cystic fibrosis. And he's alive today because of that double lung transplant. So every penny goes to Donate Life Wisconsin.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Talking to radio air personality, and I hate to keep saying legendary because I know it probably annoys you to hear that so much. Legendary radio air personality Bob Barry is with us this morning. If you grew up listening to radio in the 60s and 70s in Milwaukee, you probably were listening to Bob Barry on the radio at WOKY and a few other stations he worked at as well. Let's talk about some other personalities. We mentioned David Haynes because he was a big news personality in town.
When David Haynes first came to Milwaukee, the program director, in fact, I had him over to the house, the program director, Jim Brown, he wasn't program director then, but Jim Brown and David Haynes, and I introduced him to George Wilson. I said, this is Bruce Haynes, George. He's our new newsman. And he said, Bruce, there's nobody on my radio station with the name of Bruce. Your name is going to be David Haynes. Oh, jeez. He was really upset. You know, David was really upset about that, but he went along with it.
And they,
and he I was about to say, a personality he had.
Yeah, they used to, there were radio stations gave you your name. This is the name you're going to use on the radio.
Yep, that's right.
That was very common back then. When I was in Atlanta, yeah. They said, you're not using your name. We're going to give you the name. And I had no choice. You know, I just moved kit and caboodle down to Atlanta. And so they didn't tell me they were going to do that before I got there. But that was very common back then. You're not going to use your real name. You're going to use this catchy name that everybody can remember. Now, David Haynes had a great catch line on the air.
And toast and coffee time.
Right, burnt toast. And whenever he did his stories, like if there was a shooting, you couldn't do this today, but he used to say, shot dead with lead in the head. I remember that line.
Yeah, that was a little girl that was shot, and boy, did he get some negative feedback on that one. The manager almost fired him. He was really upset.
Now, he worked at
he got a lot of calls.
Yeah, when I came to town, he was working at WZUU, which is now WRIT, which is different station, same call letters as you worked at, though. Everything moves around. Let's talk about Barbie Benton. Now, you interviewed her. She was big with Playboy magazine and Hugh Hefner. There's a picture of her sitting on your lap. And the reason you interviewed her, she actually recorded an album.
Yes, it was a country album. And it was not real bad. I mean, they, you know, put her in an echo chamber and, you know, she, it's not too bad. She was a good interview. Kurt Pavakwa, who played for the Brewers at the time. I don't know if that name rings a bell, but some really true Brewer fans will remember Kurt Pavakwa. He was making a play for her on the air. And so that turned out to be quite interesting.
Let's talk about some
especially when she's dating Hugh Hefner,
Let's talk about some of the crazy promotions you were involved in. And some of them, you know, today radio stations, we do promotions. They're pretty safe. You go online, you register, and you win. But back then, they didn't have that. There was no computers, no online. So you had to do these crazy promotions to give away prizes on the air, get people to listen. Talk about some of them.
The I Listen to Final 11 WOKY, which I mentioned earlier, was a big one. You had to answer your phone. I Listen to Final 11 WOKY. Sometimes the jackpot got up to $5,000, $6,000. Car 92 was another good one where the car would drive around Milwaukee and park in front of a house. They'd give the address, and if you came out within 92 seconds, you would win some really nice prizes. We brought live wolves into a studio one time. We had trips to Las Vegas on a Valentine contest where you made the best Valentine. The winner was a school teacher, art teacher, who had her class design the Valentines. And she took the best one and entered it in the contest and won this trip to Vegas to meet Wayne Newton and some of the other stars in Vegas at the time. And the 95-minute trip was great.
Talk about that one. That was good. That's a good one.
That was a good one. That was when I was with WZTR, the oldies station. And we would call and just open the phone book and at random, we'd call and we'd say, "Hey, Don Rosen, we got a trip for you to go to Las Vegas this weekend." And you got to be kidding. And say, "No, turn your radio on to 95.7 and then you'll hear us on the air." "Oh, my God." You know, so it's just, "You want to go?" "I want to go." "Well, you have to be to the airport in 95 minutes. And that's the only catch. And we'll make sure that we'll call your boss. We'll do whatever we have to do to help you to get there." Some would have to turn it down, but others, one was a minister, and he had to get another minister to take his place. But they made it in 95 minutes, believe it or not.
And, of course, you couldn't do that today because you can't arrive at the airport at the last second anymore. So that wouldn't work.
That's right.
So when did you decide enough is enough? And you didn't want to do radio anymore?
I think when it got to be so complicated, you had not only one program director, but you had a national program director. You had the companies that owned 300 radio stations, and they kept on adding. And it wasn't the hometown feel anymore. You guys sound great. I mean, this is what radio should be, what you're doing. At that time, for me, it was not the same anymore.
How did you feel when you finally said it? That's it.
I felt good because I just felt this was a time. To hang it up. Now, of course, I didn't quit completely. I mean, I've been doing all kinds of stuff. I'm still doing some commercials, and I'm on the board of the Braves, Milwaukee Braves Association. I'm writing a children's book now.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have a podcast, and
Let me talk about that. The Wisconsin Broadcasters Association, in their audio museum, all your podcasts are there, so people can listen to them all the time.
Yes, you can hear me. You can hear Cher hanging up on me.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Oh, wow.
That's when I asked her. That's when I asked her about her marriage to Greg Allman.
Click.
And I said, "Geez, you haven't been married that long. What happened?" She says, "I don't know." I said, "You don't know what happened?" "No." She says, "I mean, it's none of your damn business."
Well, she was honest.
Yeah. She was honest.
It was none of your business, absolutely. The book, let me go over it again where you can get the book. It's called Rock and Roll Radio Milwaukee, Stories from the Fifth Beatle. And it's a great book, great reading, tons of photographs in there. And if you grew up with radio in Milwaukee, you've got to read this book. Even if you didn't, you got to read this book. It's such a good book. How can we get it again?
Well, it's available at Let It Be. And by the way, if you haven't seen Let It Be, what a fantastic place. It's got a cavern club, which is a replica of the cavern club in Liverpool, England. He's got bands there like this coming Saturday. He's got a Beatles tribute with the Taxmen. They are fantastic. And they're the age that the Beatles were when they started out. So it's really a lot of fun. And you just go to Let It Be Limited, and you'll see all the information. So you can just say Bob Berry's book at Let It Be, 716 Clinton Street, Waukesha, Wisconsin. I think it's 53186 is the zip code.
I needed another hour or two with you. This wasn't good enough, just 1 hour.
Oh, man, I would love to do
it. Yeah, we got to do
this. A whole show with you sometime.
Yeah, we got to do this again. Bob Berry, thank you very much for joining us. And Chris Morrow, who
thank
had a run
you.
Out. Yeah, Chris Morrow used to work with you at WOKY. I wish I could have worked. I worked at OKY later on when it wasn't a rock and roll station anymore. But it was just great talking with you. Hold on the line, Bob. Don't go anywhere, okay? Hold
Thanks,
on.
Man.
Thank you, Bob.